Okay, Renault sales are doing well here in France, but in other territories, sales are, you know, struggling a little. As the strategy committee for La RRJ, it is our job to see what we can do about that. So let's see your ideas. Come on, let's have them.
Perhaps we can capitalize on the strong anti-Trump feelings worldwide. You see, our beloved President Monsieur Macron is respected internationally for standing up to Trump. So why don't we call one of our cars the Macron?
The Renault Macron. I like it. And the best thing is we can sell it with two types of transmission. The Macron Automatique and the, wait for it, Emmanuel Macron. Hey, who says the French don't have a sense of humor, huh? Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth. He's Zog.
Hello.
Do you know, that moment's quiet before you actually said hello there, Zog. I was concerned that my technological issues today prevented us from even talking to each other to record this show. Are you in a stable recording environment, Mr. Ierson?
I am, yes. Yeah, we won't go into the tech hassle that's been plaguing you for the last few minutes, but yeah, there's been hassle.
And let's be honest, tech hassle has been plaguing me for the last 28 years or so, I think. There's always something, isn't there? There's always a driver that you've got to up to date. There's always a piece of hardware that doesn't do what it used to do. You know what I mean?
Get a Mac. Makes it easier.
I've got one!
you're not using it now, are you?
No, that is true. I'm not using it now. It's my own fault. Hey, Zog, we know what we've got to talk about, haven't we? It started. The 2025 F1 season has got underway. Were you there to watch it? Did you watch Quali live? Did you watch the practice? Did you watch the race live? What did you do?
I watched some of the practice live. Quali and the race I caught up on after the event. I wasn't into getting up quite that early, and it would have messed with other weekend plans apart from anything else. So I caught up in the afternoon, and it was worth the wait. It was a thriller.
It was a thriller, yeah. Shame it wasn't in Manila. I actually quite like middle of the night races, because it means I can still get all my stuff done on a Saturday and a Sunday, and I like to go walking these days, so I don't miss the Grand Prix, you know what I mean? So you just get up in the middle of the night, watch it, go back to bed for a couple of hours, get up, have a great day, which is what I did. I got up for the race. I went to bed early. I was actually asleep at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night.
Oh, blimey.
That's the first time in a long time. But you're right, it didn't disappoint. Not only because, you know, we've anticipated this for so long, our hopes were up, but we were delivered with a wet race and arguably a few cars slightly out of position, you might say. Qualifying was interesting. We started to get an indication, didn't we, of the proper pecking order, and it's slightly different from what I had predicted in the show a fortnight ago. The big shock had been that RB, particularly Yuki Tsunoda, seemed to be way out of position up there. He qualified fifth, didn't he?
Yeah, no, Yuki had a terrific weekend. I mean, for me, the other big takeaway from quali and the race was speed of the Williams.
Yeah.
I was honestly rather inclined to dismiss how high they'd ended up in some of the pre-season testing and so on, and really wasn't expecting them to have taken that much of a step forward. But, yeah, fantastic weekend for Williams. Great shame that Sainz spun out and didn't finish the race. Yeah, but they have clearly taken a proper step forward. The other big takeaway for me was that while McLaren, have confirmed that they're clear front runners for the title, I don't think that following pack of three is going to be quite as close to them as we'd hoped. You know, McLaren, Mercedes and Red Bull will be scrapping over their places, but I don't think those three are going to be quite as close to McLaren as they or we had hoped.
Zog, I'm going to pedant you. Please. You know, you'd pick me up on something, wouldn't you? I think what you said there is not wholly correct. You said that McLaren are favourites for the title. I think all we can say at the moment is, at the moment, McLaren are favourites for the title. There are going to be development stages during the season. They've come out of the blocks looking good. They've got a march, but we've seen it in the last couple of years in F1 where teams come out of the blocks good and then fall back and are overtaken by the others. Often, not just down to development, but down to nuanced legislational changes. And I think from, is it Barcelona, we're going to get a change in the flexi-wing regulations, which may hamper McLaren, and the others aren't far behind. It doesn't take much for them to catch up and overtake, right?
Well, if I can be equally pedantic, I think in what you're saying there, you're this is a technical point. You're not being pedantic. You're just arguing with me. You're putting a different point of view. If you're being pedantic, you have to be arguing over points of fact, over unarguable things. Yeah. That is my pedantic counterpoint, and I like to think I'm never knowingly out-pedanted.
Well done.
But to your point, yeah, sure. The way things look at the start of the season is certainly not how it looks at the end of the season, by and large. There's plenty of time to develop. But it's ominous for everybody else to think that McLaren were, what? I mean, Russell, I think, said, 0.6 of a second, 0.6 of a second quicker than anybody else. Norris and Piastri were pulling away from Verstappen, pulling out over a second a lap for some parts of the race. That's a pretty big advantage to have right now. And let's remember that McLaren have been very good in their current incarnation. They were very good last year at developing the car during the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sure, there's room for everybody else to develop and get quicker, but they're going to have to do a much better job than McLaren might do in that time. And that's a big ask.
Yeah, huge ask. Like you say, they seem to have the march at the moment. They are relentlessly consistent. You know, they've found something that they understand or have control of and are going down that route. That's commendable, isn't it? You know, that's how you succeed. We've talked about teams who experiencing difficulty between the correlation between their what they expect to get and what they find on track, and
yeah,
that's been an issue for the big guns, Mercedes as well. I know that Ferrari have had a bit of a wind tunnel upgrade recently. Aston Martin have got a new, I think it's a 60% wind tunnel, which is as big as you're allowed to have, which they are, I think, still calibrating, and it could take ages to calibrate that. You know, it takes a long time before you're certain that what you get in the real world is what you get in the tunnel compared to what your data predictions are. It's a big part of it. But, yeah, they are limited, though, in the development race, having said this, Sog, aren't they? You know, there are only certain amount of gains left in this car because it's the last year of this version of the formula for Formula One, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, if the car was continuing to next year, it'd be worth developing and developing, but they've got to throw everything at next year, haven't they?
Yeah, and McLaren are likely to be one of the teams that will feel they can put more of their development effort into the 2026 car than the others, yeah. You know, the way things are looking right now. So, of course, with it being a significant change in rules after this season, it throws everything up in the air a bit more. It gives everyone a bit more of a chance, but McLaren are just maybe that little bit more likely to be carrying an advantage through to next year. We should maybe just talk about Ferrari, because I was honestly disappointed that Ferrari didn't do better this weekend than they did. I wanted a Lewis Hamilton fairy tale result.
Yeah, didn't we all?
And we had a moment when he was leading the race, although, you know, that was never going to translate into anything more than a momentary advantage. You know, there was no way he would ever have got to the end of the race on those hard tyres with the rain that was clearly coming up. Yeah, how do you think they're going to feel about that finish? What was it, 8th and 10th, weren't they? Leclerc, 8th and...
Yeah, well, they qualified 7th and 8th. Charles just ahead of Lewis. You know, Lewis was within 0.4 of a second of Charles, I believe, which is quite a substantial difference, really. And I've heard a lot of... We heard a lot of testiness. What's the term? It was very testy.
Testiness, yeah, yeah.
Lewis, yeah, he was agitated in the car. He wasn't happy. I'm talking about Lewis. Charles seemed to have a much happier and wittier drive. That comment when he said that his seat was full of water and the pit lane came back to him and said, oh, yes, that will be the water.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, thank you for that. We'll add that to the Book of Words of Wisdom.
Yeah.
Very, very wry, but very witty. You know, he was in good spirits.
And that speaks to him, I think, being fairly relaxed. You're not usually that, you know, dry and funny if you're super stressed. And I think he was having an easier race than Lewis.
Yeah.
Lewis, you know, was sounding a bit agitated on the radio, which he has from time to time in the past. I put that down to the fact that, you know, for all his experience, he hasn't had that much running in that car. He's new to the team and, you know, it's a wet race. And again, for all his experience and for all his skill in the wet, he is one of the best drivers in changing conditions.
We've seen it, haven't we?
I don't think he'd driven that car at all in the wet before. So that can't have been an easy session for him. And, you know, at the same time that I'm disappointed he only finished 10th, and I'm sure a lot of other fans will be. You know, maybe in the end they're not going to be that unhappy with the fact that they got both the cards and the points in a race that was, you know, so hazardous. In the end, in a race where actually so many drivers ended up not finishing. You know, Alonso, Sainz, you know, both crashed out, both tremendously capable, yeah, experienced guys. So the fact that they brought both cars home in the points. And actually, let's remember Leclerc's span.
Yeah.
Lewis kept his car pointing in the right direction for the whole race, as far as I could tell. So,
yeah, he did. You know. Yeah. Even though Charles span, he passed Lewis twice during the race, if memory serves. And he was making no bones about it. It was very Alex elbows out Albon. I think he's asserting himself, and correctly so he should. And it's a challenge to Lewis to match Leclerc's confidence. And if he can do that, he'll beat him. And if he can beat Leclerc, he's in with a chance for the championship. But these are all ifs and ifs and ifs, aren't they? F1 is if backwards. No, it isn't. It's one F.
Now you see, that is being pedantic. That's but Ferrari have, you know, two terrific drivers there. That's a fabulous pairing. And, you know, I hope they're going to be matching each other throughout the season. But I guess I want them to kind of, you know, be racing close and matching other, but not taking points away from each other in a way, which is impossible.
Yeah.
Let's just hope for a good season.
Yeah, indeed. Just coming back to qualifying, we mentioned that Yuki was up in fifth, Alex Albon in sixth. And the interesting one for me was that Carlos Sainz only qualified 10th. Now, my money was on Sainz being quicker than Alex Albon over a single lap, given equal opportunities, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Alex Albon is even better than we think he is. And have you seen him walk? Have you ever watched Alex Albon walk?
I haven't, but tell me about that in a moment. But I will just say that Alex Albon has impressed me as a very improved, matured driver in the last couple of years. You know, after he had his, you know, early spell with
Red Bull.
Red Bull, and, you know, and then, you know, was kicked out and, you know, and then came back in. And, you know, I think he's done really well. He's a much stronger, more rounded driver. And, you know, Act 2 Alex Albon is a star.
This brings me back to his walk, what I'm saying about his walk. He's got a swagger at the moment. I don't know if you've watched Star Trek Discovery, but there's a character in that called Saru, who is an incredibly tall Kelpian, a biped with hooved feet.
I did watch Discovery until I got bored of it and decided it was rubbish and gave up on it.
And you're not wrong either. But Saru is one of the better things in it. But because he has to wear these kind of platform shoes, which give him the appearance that he's got hooves, he has to walk on tippy toes with his arms behind him. And he describes that walk as being inspired by a catwalk model. There's something about the swing that he has to do to stay balanced. And I was watching Alex Albon being interviewed by Rebecca Brooks, is it, on Sky, and he had exactly that swagger. And I think swagger's the word. You're talking about him being a mature, more rounded driver. It's a more confident driver. I think the nurturing of Williams in the James Vowles era is benefiting not just the drivers, but the cars and the entire organisation. That's where the swagger comes from.
Yeah, I think as to the behind-the-scenes aspect of it, you know, how much of it is down to the backing he's got from the team, the confidence that Williams have in him, and how much it's, you know, driven by Albon himself, I'm not quite sure. But it's certainly there. He's the increased confidence. And I think it certainly can't help that Vowles and Williams have been as supportive of him as they have. And again, they've got a terrific lineup there in Sainz and Albon. Williams are solidly on the up at the moment. It'd be great to see what they achieve before the season's end. Also, quick mention for Bortoletto, who had actually a pretty good weekend, although he did end up being another one of the snappy, spinning out casualties into the barriers, DNF. He out-qualified Hulk, and he was having a decent race up to the point where he binned it. It was a tough weekend for the rookies. I mean, I think Antonelli was the only one that finished the race, wasn't he?
Yeah, Hajar spun out, Doohan, Sainz, not a rookie. Alonso, not a rookie. Bortoletto didn't finish. Lawson didn't finish. Ollie Bearman finished in 14th.
Oh, you're right. Of course he did. Yeah. Sorry.
Above him, it was Kimi, the new Kimi. Kimi 2, we're going to call him, who finished in 4th.
Yeah, great result.
In the end, is that how it played out?
He finished 4th on the track. Then he got a penalty that was appealed.
Yeah.
And they rescinded the penalty, so he got 4th place back.
I would think that Toto would be very happy with George quietly getting onto the podium in 3rd, and Kimi too, as near to him as you could possibly be, just 10 seconds. Having driven through the field, where did he start? 16th or something like that?
16th.
And he finished ahead of the Ferraris.
Also, speaking of rookies, Liam Lawson, what about, will Red Bull be regretting ditching Perez for Lawson after that race? What do you reckon?
Like a turtle, I'm going to stick my neck out on this and say absolutely not. I am certain, I've said it for 3 years, I think, on this podcast, Liam Lawson has a very special set of skills. He is a great racer, a great overtaker, and brings it home. I watched him do it in F2 and he stunned me. I thought, wow, that lad, that's proper driving, that is. But he stood out to me, even above some of the heroes who have emerged out of F2 in the last couple of years. I just think for one reason or another, this weekend didn't work out for Liam Lawson, whatever that reason. They tried a different nose, apparently, to Max's car.
Yeah.
It was an experiment, and the experiment didn't pay off. Now, they're probably going to continue doing that. They will give everything that they can to help Max win another championship, and if it's at the cost of the other car, it could well happen. But no, I don't think they will regret having Liam Lawson there. I know how good he is. I think that was a bad weekend. I'll review it in 3 or 4 weekends, right? You've got 4 weekends to prove yourself. And if you can get 2 or 3 out of those 4 weekends, good. And you watch, she's just down one. That's my view. Okay, Zoggy, how bad did you feel for Isaac Hadjar when he spun out on the formation?
Oh yeah, poor chap. I mean, he obviously he took it quite hard. I hope he doesn't carry too much of that pain into the next few races. I hope he, you know, gets that out of his head pretty quickly. Yeah, because let's remember, it is pretty embarrassing to lose it on the formation lap. But let's remember that, you know, Sainz crashed out and, you know, Hadjar wasn't the only driver who span under non-race conditions on that weekend.
Yep.
And I was glad to see, you know, Anthony Hamilton putting an arm around his shoulder when he was on his way back and, you know, being supportive. And that was a lovely moment. I think it
beautiful
speaks to Anthony Hamilton's qualities as a human being. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, yeah, poor old Hadjar. Yeah, it looks pretty crappy. It looks pretty lousy to drop it like that. But let's hope he puts it behind him. He's got the whole rest of the season, hopefully, to prove himself. And, yeah, let's just put that behind us and move on.
He might be my favourite personality on the grid at the moment, Isaac Hadjar. He is completely transparent. He wears glee and he wears brokenheartedness clearly, very clearly. Mm. And I really felt for him. I think he's a likeable guy and a very good driver. Taking him a couple of years to prove himself in F2. I like the guys who go in and crack it in the first time, like Bortoleto, and off we go, right? But there are other good workmanlike drivers who've earned their place on the grid. And I think Hadjar has. I think he has. Tsunoda's finishing position does not reflect the pace of that car over that weekend. And this is what I can't quite explain. How have RB, which I believe is what they're called today, or this afternoon anyway, how have they managed to put a car in that is, in some ways, better than the Red Bull, you might say? Or is it the drivers?
Well, it's maybe a slightly more compliant, slightly less edgy car, perhaps. Maybe it's a bit, a bit easier to push as far as the driver's comfortable with without, you know, getting to a very snappy, difficult point.
Yeah.
But yeah, we only had Tsunoda to really show what that car could achieve under race conditions. But yeah, but they're going to be respectable this year. And Tsunoda is also a guy who's come along nicely. You know, he's improved significantly in the last couple of years. He's a much safer pair of hands.
Tsunoda has to go to Aston Martin with the Honda engine, surely, when that happens in the next year or two. But that relies on either Stroll Senior sacking his son or Alonso saying, I can't be bothered doing this anymore. But I think Alonso's going to hang around for at least one more, possibly two more years, because he's counting on the Adrian Newey effect.
Yeah, but couldn't you really see Alonso hanging on for more than another couple of years? That's, you know, he's going to be really knocking on at that point. And remarkable as he is, yeah, more than a couple of years? I don't know. But at that point, which of those two drivers is more likely to get the boot for Tsunoda or somebody else?
Yeah.
It could be a closer decision than you might think.
Yeah. Okay, one last thing of F1 before we talk about something else, Zog. Where did Nico Hülkenberg finish?
Well, he finished ahead of Bortoleto, despite Bortoleto out-qualifying him. Was it? Where did he finish? Oh, I can't. Is it
seventh?
Was it seventh? Was it that hard?
Yes.
Fair play to him. Yeah, he did a great job.
And in doing so, scored more points on that weekend than Sauber did over the entire season last year.
That's good. Yeah, no, well done, the Hulk. Well done.
Thank you. I feel happy now I've heard you say it. Gareth Jones on speed! Just as I was preparing to publish this programme today, We heard the very sad news that Eddie Jordan had died today in South Africa. We knew Eddie was unwell, didn't expect to lose him. I'm sure I speak for all of us on the On Speed team when we say that we're all great fans of Eddie. He was the original F1 disruptor. He brought a bit of rock and roll to Formula One. I became a Jordan fan when Damon Hill joined the team, and I got to meet Eddie and talk to him several times. The last time we had a conversation, which was at the Belgian Grand Prix in Spa a few years ago, I mentioned to Eddie that I'd written a song, one of the very first songs I ever wrote for Gareth Jones on Speed, which was about him and his team. The song tells the entire story of Jordan's time in Formula One. Eddie seemed very pleased to hear this and wanted to tell me that his mother's name was Eileen, and he loved Come On Eileen. So it's kind of fitting that this song is called Come On Eddie, and we recorded it in the style of Dexy's Midnight Runners. Eddie, F1 will miss you.
The three-day working week. We were sad for Tom Bryson. We cheered for John Watson, but not for Jim Clark, because he's a Scotsman. And Jordan went racing, and then we were keen. His accent was Irish, his cars were all green. Come on, Eddie, you know we all want you to win. So to Midland, I admit I felt a bit sick. Uncomfortable truth that I knew had to face. My favourite GP team would no longer race. Come on, Eddie, so we all want you to win. Come on, Eddie, we know that your chances to be everything. The colour is yellow, but Eddie. Come on, Eddie, you know we all want you to win. but Andy had gone. We love the name Jordan in Formula One.
Ah, don't worry, Kevin. It's the luck of the Irish. I'll be back. Did I mention that I bought myself a new home now?
And where's that, Mr. Jordan?
Everywhere, Kevin. Everywhere. Would you like to see my collection of toupees?
Gareth Jones on Speed.
I'm sure it's no secret that both Zog and I have been admirers of not only SpaceX's project to redevelop space technology, but also Tesla's incredible work at creating electric cars. But recently, Elon Musk, the leader of both those concerns, has been behaving in a way that most of us don't, rational people don't want to see. And as a result, could well be killing the sales of Tesla cars. It's serious though, Zog, isn't it?
Well, it's serious on whatever level you want to look at it. It's not remotely funny at all. I mean, he's in full-on supervillain mode. He's, you know, encouraging extremely nasty right-wing politics all over the place and hollowing out American government and important institutions, doing tremendous damage. You know, there may be some tiny bits of good in there. I'm not convinced of that, but he's definitely doing a lot of damage. Yeah, it's quite a shit show. And from the point of view of, you know, from the narrow point of view of Tesla, yeah, it's tanking sales all over the place. A little less so in America than in other parts of the world. I mean, I think I read that the drop in sales in three... I'll just cancel that phone call. I don't think I need to hear that.
That's Elon Musk contacting you to complain right
now.
That was
quick. Well, he's moved to Glasgow, apparently. Tesla sales in Scandinavia are down between 40 and 50%. American sales are, I think, down 15% or so. Polls in Germany and in Australia suggest that consumers there are massively less inclined toward buying Teslas than they were a while ago. Yeah, and this is the flip side of the cult of personality that has helped, I think, you know, until relatively recently, that has helped Tesla as a brand. It has been part of the reason why Tesla has succeeded. And yeah, now it's swinging back the other way. He's a liability, not a positive for the company.
If you live by the sword, then you'll die by the sword. You know, your good points are also your bad points. And I suppose Musk's good points are his ability to question something from first principles. For instance, why can't we build a rocket that is reusable? Why can't we build a rocket that lifts 100 tons to orbit? And why can't we build an electric car which outperforms a petrol car? You know, that's his entire modus operandi. If you apply that in a sort of political situation, it's kind of tear and burn. It's a bit dangerous. It's a bit, you know,
well,
crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think the secret to why he's been so successful with Tesla and SpaceX is probably a little more complex than that. But there's certainly that approach of, you know, move fast and break things. That is a very, you know, Silicon Valley new tech way of thinking that's worked for a lot of that generation of tech entrepreneurs, has certainly been part of Elon Musk's strategy and thinking and his approach. It can work very well in a tech-driven business context, I believe. It's not an approach that works well with government, where I think you have to be often a lot more cautious, conservative, boring, dull, technocratic, and yeah, the move fast and break things does not work well with big government institutions.
Okay, do you think then Musk's fast moving, breaking things modus operandi at the moment, he's moved very quickly, is it going to break people's relationship with Tesla? Are Tesla doomed? Are they irreparably damaged? Are they scarred or all, no influence whatsoever? What's your view?
Somewhere in the middle. No, they're irreparably damaged for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people who would be natural Tesla buyers. I mean, broadly speaking, you know, I think if you were to oversimplify things a little bit, you know, left-leaning consumers, liberal consumers are a little bit more likely to be interested in buying a Tesla than conservative-leaning yeah. consumers. Those people are absolutely the people who are going to be more turned off by Musk's turn towards playing with right-wing politics and the levers of power as his new toy rather than a car company or a rocket company. And for a lot of those people, you can't undo that damage. That said, the extent of the hit they've taken recently is, you know, I'm sure that, yeah, they can pull out of that. In a few years, particularly if Musk was to, you know, step back, if we ever see a different Musk in a couple of years, I don't think, no, the damage isn't irreparable, I'm sure. You know, I think they're a little bit too big, and you know, for all the flaws they do have, and maybe particularly that the Cybertruck has, they're actually a bit too good to fail completely. So, no, they're certainly going to take some pain from it. People's interest in buying those cars has significantly dropped recently. Their stock price, you know, took a big hit recently. You know, famously, the company's lost more value than, it's had a more sort of catastrophic fall than I think just about any other company in stock market history. And Musk's own personal wealth, you know, has dropped by $130 billion or so.
Oh, how unfortunate.
He can afford it, but it's... Yeah. But that still only takes the Tesla stock price back to about where it was 6 months ago. So it's kind of dropping from, you know, a significant high in the meantime.
It's curious that the electric car, you know, is exactly as you said a moment ago, kind of the territory of the lefty planet loving person, you might say. However,
to some extent, yeah. It's not too simple. You know, yeah. there are plenty of people on the right of the spectrum who love electric vehicles, yeah. and there are plenty of people on the left of the spectrum that don't like them. You know, it's not an overly strong correlation. But
the Cybertruck, in many ways, has become an icon of the evil right now. How did that happen? You know,
I mean,
people associate the Cybertruck with right-wing politics every time they see it. That's why you're getting eggs thrown at it and all that.
Yeah, but that's because it's an Elon Musk mobile, not because yeah. it's that's because of the Musk association. That's the flip side of the association. You know, at the same time that yeah. Musk's cult of personality has been part of what has driven Tesla to its success. You know, this is the flip side. This is the downside. There, as you say, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword.
Okay, here's the upside then, so there are going to be an awful lot of people selling Teslas secondhand right now. And like you just said, the Cybertruck is probably too good to fail. Most Teslas are too good to fail. They're really good bits of kit. I know there are issues, but we might be able to pick up a bargain Tesla Model 3 or Model S or Model Y or Model X now, because nobody wants them, and they'll work perfectly well. All you've got to do is change the badging from Tesla to, I don't know, let's think of another great electrician, Edison or Lathwaite.
Maxwell,
that's what I put.
James Clerk Maxwell. Let's go for, Maxwell's field equations, one of the great achievements of physics. I'd go with a Maxwell.
I'm going to put Lathwaite on mine. Not that I'm going to do it, but Eric Lathwaite was my electrical hero. Great British engineer who invented the linear electric motor with a Blackburn accent or something like that. Oh, what a lovely man. Wonderful. But hey, yeah, I'm going to buy a Lathwaite. And good luck to Musk. I'm sure none of this will bother him when he's Emperor of Mars, which of course is going to happen before he dies, isn't it?
Yeah, could do. Yeah, he said he wants to die on Mars. Yeah, go on, fuck off to Mars.
You've been listening to Zog.
Goodbye.
And I was Gareth. We're going to leave you with the tune that we always write and record for the first race of the season with bespoke lyrics. This is F1's Back 2025. See you in a fortnight.
I got up in the night to watch it live and see if Lewis Hamilton can try to survive. And the thing in red is a good idea for you and me and the Scuderia. The great Gabriel Bortoletto, who did a good job, but he could have done better. And Andrea, Kimi, Antonelli made it look easy on my telly. Had you had a nightmare doing badly? Lawson wasn't awesome, both Spaniards crashed sadly. Barely made it, Lando landed pole. Lewis got a point, a podium's the next goal. But Lewis has got to do a lot of work to match the magnificence of Charles Leclerc. F1's back and let me tell you, wow! We are all tifosi, yeah. We are all tifosi now.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.
Wow! We are all too fancy, yeah. We are all too fancy now.